Welcome to Thriving in the Age of Disruption with Dr. Ramesh. We're glad you're joining us today to meet an inspiring changemaker and social impact pioneer, Ms. Nguyen Thu Huệ. We'll explore how best to leverage on resources to build effective nonprofit organizations for maximal social impact. Huệ also shares her strategies for thriving in the face of adversity while making a meaningful difference in the world. A trailblazer in the Vietnamese nonprofit sector with over 25 years of experience, Huệ transitioned from the corporate world and founded leading Vietnamese NGOs such as Vietnet ICT and Center for Marine Life Conservation and Community Development. She is also a global fellow for Moving Worlds and Obama Foundation. Dive into our discussion on creating value beyond financial gains, where Huệ highlights resource mobilization, partnerships, and community engagement as keys to driving sustainable change, scalability, and impact in nonprofit projects.
Welcome to the Thriving in the Age of Disruption podcast series, Ms. Huệ. I'm so excited to have this discussion with you today. And we could start off by having you introduce yourself, a little bit about your career, maybe your personal life, so that the listeners get to know you.
Thank you, Dr. Ramesh. My name is Huệ. I am the nonprofit founder. For the last 25 years, I am building, establishing, leading a nonprofit or social impact organization. I am living in Hanoi with my family. I'm married with two children. Very exciting to be in conversation with you.
Wonderful. I knew that you were someone who had spent a number of years in nonprofit sector. But before we start off on that, what I wanted to do was to share with you my thoughts about disruption. I think that one of the key mindset to have is actually an entrepreneurial mindset in today's age of disruption. And I define entrepreneurial mindset as one whereby, as an individual, we are being resourceful. And resourceful means that we can identify the need or we can look for the solution to a problem. It all starts with actually being able to define what the problem is. And number two, of course, as part of having an entrepreneurial mindset, it's also to be able to manage uncertainty and to take risks. The third part is actually to create value, whether it's financial, non-financial, or it is for ourselves or others. With NPOs, you have to be someone who creates value outside of the financial frame. When you look at the nonprofit sector, how does this entrepreneurial mindset apply? And how have you seen that in your own development from moving from the corporate sector to the nonprofit sector?
Thank you. You mentioned about the nonprofit and the resources. This is exactly both the opportunities and also the struggles. Sometimes in the early days, I think that a nonprofit, that means we work for a good cause. And then if somebody provides us with resources, we do it. And without it, we don't have to be responsible for anything. But the truth is not like this. I spent already 25 years continuously working on the sector. So I realized that when you identify the problem, the issues, and then you want to contribute to solving those problems, you automatically, as a nonprofit leader, look for the resources, be able to mobilize not only the finance, but also talents, volunteers, and social capitals. Being resourceful, taking care of your own finance, but the issue is the community you serve, and not only your own resources, but the community and other people's resources. So entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial mindset is applicable to us. It's become very essential mindset of the nonprofit.
I love the way you define the old paradigm in NPO sector, which was we are here to contribute towards a good cause. And if we get the resources, we'll do it. If we don't get the resources, we don't do it. And now when you look at how the world is disrupting and the need to create and serve the underserved, actually there is a need to have a discipline that whether or not you have the resources available, that an NPO is actually generating those ideas to have the resources to do their good cause. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your own journey. How did you transition from corporate to the NPO sector? And 25 years ago, you're an early leader in that space.
At first, it's not my choice, but my chance. I was recruited in a U.S. law firm branch in Hanoi. This is my dream career. I was having a law degree. However, after years spending my time in the law firm, I didn't see myself really happy there. So there's the opportunities where there's a marine life work projects. It's funny. I was not a swimmer that time, but I made a quick decision. So let's think about something that made me really happy. I also decided to enter into the marine life work without strategic thinking that time. Because 25 years old, I just, okay, if I'm not happy here, I should find some meaningful works. But the more I enter into the nonprofit sector, the more I see that my legal background, my discipline and the governance, and then the learnings from the corporate sectors also very meaningful, very helpful.
Very interesting. And so what do you do actually in your marine life conservation NPO?
This is a non-state actors registered in Vietnam. And our role is like partnership brokering. We serve the community in the coastal, the fishers and their communities so that they can be aware of the policy, why they have their own livelihood resilience. They also cooperate in a way that they also part of the solution to protect the ecosystems. It is easy to say, but not very easy in doing things. Our role is to help the community, especially the disadvantaged, the poor fishers, so that they are aware of their role, their rights, and then empower them to be able to be part of the discussing process, decision-making process with other actors.
So that's very important because if I remember correctly, fishery products are actually one of the key exports of Vietnam and contribute to the economic growth as well. How many percent is that actually?
Yeah, it's very significant. I remember that fishery export alone already achieved about $9 billion last year.
Wow.
And that is very significant. And itself directly about 2 million people who are connected in the value chains, the one who do other jobs. But we can talk about 5 million people directly associated with the fisheries in the country. And we are very proud that Vietnam is ocean countries. We have a long coast.
Yes, that's true. And until I came to Vietnam in March of 2022, I never had the opportunity to enjoy so many different kinds of fresh seafood, the different shellfish. And it's been really a joy going to different restaurants and trying the seafood here.
Yeah, Vietnamese are very proud of our seafood. And our seafood have presented in many markets. And but our work is also make sure that the very primary producer, the fishermen, the farmers have their equitable part in the value chains.
Yes, that's an important piece. And so what does an average fisherman earn today? Like how many dollars per day do they earn in terms of salary?
Oh, it depends because we have also different fisheries. The one who engage in, for example, tuna, they go offshore and catch the tuna. Also different from the very small one doing the coastal small boat. It varies. But compared to other agricultural sectors, fishery is sometimes better, but some very poor.
Okay, I got that. In your experience over the last 25 years, what do you think is the biggest challenge for NPOs and for projects in the social impact space?
The biggest challenge sometimes is the sustainability. Some solution can work in a small scale. You work well in a commune, in a district. But when you find a solution that lasts, for the larger part of population, that is the challenge. Because sometimes the NPO sector, like us, we can be able to mobilize the resources, but normally in a very modest, small amount. The more we enter into the sectors, we realize that having a small-scale pilot modern practice successful is not enough. But we have to be a visionary, thinking about how strategically the solution can be scalable or impactful. So that refers to the entrepreneur mindset that you mentioned earlier. The challenge is scaling up, right? And not only depend on the resources, but the scope of impacts that NPO can contribute. With the resources you have, you can contribute to a part of solution. You cannot be all the solution. You need to be among many players. And not like in business. Some business, they are leader, right? They can lead the whole sector. But NPO is a different story.
To that point, what is the thing that holds them back from coming together?
That is a good question. NPOs see the need, realize that they need to work together or in partnerships. But sometimes they both see the need. But in terms of scarce resources, sometimes they are also competitive. That's already happening that there are some alliance, some networks, that number of NPOs who are sharing the same mission or sector already working together. That's happening already in Vietnam. However, to the scale that we envision is not that popular. There are some barriers, I think. The governance structure that's applicable to NPO and the accountability, because one NPO, when you bought the resources from a third party, from funding partners, you are accountable for that. And when you are working with others, sometimes the level of governance, the level of leadership and the cultural issues may be not ready for you to get into a marriage or the partnership.
That's right. This has been a really insightful discussion to understand a little bit more about the challenges of the NPO sector in scaling up. I'm looking forward to actually discussing this further offline with you to see how we can make a bigger impact together. I feel that crisis-ready mindset is the second mindset that is important in this age of disruption, largely because crisis refers to a setback or a failure, especially when we are dealing with entrepreneurial projects where we are creating something newly. There are always setbacks. There are always failures. So how does one keep a mindset which allows us to be in action and not to be stopped? Because one reaction can be to freeze and do nothing, or another is to run away, flight. And the last, of course, is to fight back. So in your experience, I'm sure you've had to deal with a lot of crises. Perhaps you can share an example of one, as well as what are the practices that help you to be grounded in a crisis?
I spent quite a long time in the sector, and not only one crisis. Many things happened to me personally in the middle of my career. Maybe 10 years ago, we were awarded two very big projects. Very happy. But then I was sent to the hospital by my husband. And that time, it is really crisis. And then I have to think about resilience. So develop resilience become part of my vocabulary. And professionally, number of crises. For NPO, you mobilize resources. But it does not mean that you have to give too much for your own development. You spend them for serving the community. And sometimes you face the issue that maybe cash flow shortage. You have a big idea. You have a good program to be run. Sometimes you have a gap month and the talent's gone. They don't want to stay or share the risk. And you have to start over again. So that's a crisis phase. And then we have to learn how to respond to the crisis in a more meaningful way, not to be panicked, but be in a ready mood.
That's right. So when you started to develop resilience, did you turn to meditation? Did you start to do yoga? What did you do to develop that?
Yeah, like I said, I was a little bit late beginner of yoga. But after being hospitalized, I started to do my yoga. And recently, I listened to the Stoic podcast, Simple But Meaningful Tools, that helped me overcome those crisis moments, like taking care of the thing under your control. Simple thing, but sometimes as a leader, you want to solve the issue larger, much larger than your capacity, and you feel unhappy when the thing not happened like you wish. But now we realize that we need to get it out when the time is right.
I'm really intrigued. I have interviewed a number of Vietnamese change makers in my podcast series, and a lot of you talk about Stoic practices. I love what you talked about. If you can just have that moment every day to take care of something which is under your control and restore for yourself that balance, even though everything around you is not under your control, then you can be at peace and calm.
I saw many friends who are also in the sector, but they already practice yoga and maybe they do mindfulness before me. And it's a good practice. Vietnamese also very quick learner. We observe and then we ask ourselves how other woman leader, she can be so resilient. And then we also share. Vietnam also part of the Buddhism. I think maybe, maybe that's part of the reason.
Where are you in your spiritual journey?
Oh, I'm just a beginner, frankly speaking. Now I started to learn to be calm, responding to the thing that's happening around me. I learned to spend time reflecting daily and also, most importantly, building the good habit. When I mentioned about being hospitalized and putting into the bad situation of my health because of me not taking care of myself. So for spiritually, I love the concept of leading from within. So starting from myself and practicing it. Because having a good habit, practicing it, it really takes time and discipline. Yes. Like 1 hour walking every day. It looks very easy, but finding the time Prioritizing it is not easy, but this is how I put myself into the discipline.
Wonderful. So what I took away from your conversation about spirituality is that it's leading from within. And to do that, we need to practice with discipline. Whatever that we want to do, whether it's to walk for that 1 hour, it does take effort. And when you take that consistent effort every day, it is spiritual because it gets you to connect to yourself and to others as well. About living a simple life, what is living a simple life for you?
Oh, it's really important in this moment of my life. Simple life is really match because for me, simple life, that focus on what is important. So prioritize and what you can control. Sometimes I used to multitask. Now I identify what is really important for myself, my family, my organizations, and what I can do best. This is not starting right away. It's a process. It's a journey. And simple life for me is focusing on what's really important and let go. What's not?
That is true. Let go of what is not. If you had to describe thriving and use 3 words to describe it, what are the 3 words that you will use?
Oh, thriving for me, first, is a growth mindset, open to learning. And the other, that adversary is part of life. Pay attention. Focus your energy resources to what you can control, to what is your priorities.
Very well said. In our consulting program, we talk about sustainability in terms of the ongoing thriving of a living system. How does it show up for you with your conservation work?
My organization is focusing on the environment. Sustainability is part of the concept that we're talking about every day. For us to continue the mission in a systematic way is part of what we call sustainability. You remember in the early conversation, we're talking about having the resources, do it.
Yes.
Having no resources, stop. But sustainability means that you have to find always to continue the good cause, the good work that you already defined, and be innovative, be creative. The sustainability concept is in our organization. If you work for 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, it's okay. But 25 years is something really sustainable.
Yes, it is an achievement. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What would be your message for emerging women leaders who want to enter the NPO sector?
Yeah, there's wisdom from the woman who go before us. So to emerging women leaders, I would like to convey what I've learned. Be yourself, develop yourself, take care of yourself, and teach others to do the same. Be principled and accountable. Especially, please allocate enough time for your own reflection and let go. What is not under your control.
Very good. I love this.
Being a woman leader is also a privilege. A lot of opportunities, a lot of challenge. But like I said earlier, challenge is part of life. It's also how we react to that challenge. Also part of the learning journey that we develop our resilience.
That's right. Thank you very much. This is the fun part of the interview. I'm going to ask you some questions. Just tell me what comes to mind. What's your favorite book?
It's Becoming from Michelle Obama.
Oh, lovely. You were part of the Obama Fellowship, right? Which year did you do that? Can you share your key takeaway from that?
Being a leader, being connected is very important to a larger network. So that is key takeaway I got was in a network of so many other talented leaders. My leadership can be reflected in the story of others and we learn from each other.
And what's your favorite travel destination?
Bali.
Nice. If you could have dinner with anyone in the world, who would it be?
I was having dinner with the President Obama once already. I think you, Dr. Ramesh, like I said from the beginning, you are my idol. I love the way you developed your career. And this idea also of excellence since 2021. I really want to have a deeper conversation with you. Exploring the journey and the thing that very much related to us as the woman leaders.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. What is the most unusual food that you have eaten?
Oh, I don't know if I upset you, but once I have one intern, he is the Swiss. But for some reason, he insists me to come to the nearby Indian restaurant.
Yes.
I went there and I choose by random. I don't know what's the content. I just choose from the menu. And it turned out that I can eat only 50% of what I chose. I should have researched before because it's very rare opportunities for me to test the new food.
Okay, so I'll have to warn you beforehand if I'm going to take you to exotic places, especially Indian restaurants. If you can have a superpower, what would it be?
Superpower? Yeah, actually, I have my secret that I have a number of words that in the moments that I need the superpower, I just whisper the words. Of course, I will not disclose you, but the words are very strong. I used them when I was very small until now.
I think in some places they call it like a mantra. You say it to yourself to give yourself confidence. Wow.
Yes.
Really great. And what's the best advice that you've received?
Oh, it's from one of my friends who came back from Russia 30 years ago. He said, well, Vietnam has very long coast. Whatever you do with the coastal, you will never be out of jobs. Just do it. Yeah. Uh-huh. So that is good advice.
Yeah, that's true. Given what you've been doing for the last 25 years. And what's the worst advice you've ever gotten?
Oh, the worst advice? Some of my other friends inspired me to become a dancer. And I think this is not a very good advice. I was trying, but my husband doesn't find it a good idea.
I see. Okay. I've enjoyed this discussion. So thank you very much, Ms. Hui, for joining me today and sharing your experience as well as your aspirations for the future.
Thank you, Dr. Ramesh. See you
soon. And we are going to catch up for our dinner.
Yes. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dr. Ramesh and Hui, for sharing your invaluable insights on adopting an entrepreneurial mindset to address social challenges effectively. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur or investor, looking for inspiration to overcome the challenges in your life, or simply curious about the stories that shape the change makers of our world, this podcast series is your gateway to a world of insight and inspiration. Be sure to subscribe to the Thriving in the Age of Disruption podcast or follow Dr. Ramesh on LinkedIn and other social media so you too become a part of Dr. Ramesh's Thriving Network.